Hey, it's Mike, and this podcast is brought to you by my books. Seriously, though, it actually is. I make my living as a writer, so as long as I keep selling books, I can keep writing articles over at Muscle for Life and Legion and recording podcasts and videos like this and all that fun stuff. Now, I have several books, but the place to start is Bigger, Leaner, Stronger if you're a guy and Thinner, Leaner, Stronger if you're a girl. Now, these books, they basically teach you everything you need to know about dieting, training, and supplementation to build muscle, lose fat, and look and feel great without having to give up all the foods you love or grind away in the gym every day doing workouts that you hate. Now, you can find my books everywhere you can buy books online, like Amazon, Audible, iBooks, Google Play, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, and so forth. And if you're into audiobooks like me, you can actually get one of my books for free, one of my audiobooks for free, with a 30-day free trial of Audible. To do that, go to muscleforlife.com/audiobooks. That's www.muscleforlife.com/audiobooks, and you can see how to do this. Now, also, if you like my work in general, then I really think you're going to like what I'm doing with my supplement company, Legion. Now, as you probably know, I'm not a fan of the supplement industry. I mean, I've wasted who knows how many thousands of dollars over the years on worthless supplements that really do nothing. And I've always had trouble finding products that I actually thought were worth buying and recommending. And, well, basically, I had been complaining about this for years, and I decided to finally do something about it and start making my own products. And not just any products, but really the exact products that I myself have always wanted. So a few of the things that make my supplements unique are, one, they're 100% naturally sweetened and flavored. Two, all ingredients are backed by peer-reviewed scientific research that you can verify for yourself, because on our website, we explain why we've chosen each ingredient, and we also cite all supporting studies so you can go dive in and check it out for yourself. Three, all ingredients are also included at clinically effective dosages, which are the exact dosages used in the studies proving their effectiveness. This is important, of course, because while something like creatine is proven to help improve strength and help you build muscle faster, if you don't take enough, then you're not going to see the benefits that are seen in scientific research. And four, there are no proprietary blends, which means that you know exactly what you're buying. All our formulations are 100% transparent, both with the ingredients and the dosages. So you can learn more about my supplements at www.legionathletics, that's L-E-G-I-O-N, athletics.com. And if you like what you see and you want to buy something, use the coupon code PODCAST, P-O-D-C-A-S-T, and you'll save 10% on your order. All right, thanks again for taking the time to listen to my podcast, and let's get to the show. All right, so it is the whole, I said I'd wear my Halloween costume, so, as you can see, Red Ranger in the house. It's the tightest thing ever. Let's see, put my desk going down. Might be too bright. Well, anyways, it's the tightest costume ever, which is going to be hilarious. And yeah, this is my Halloween costume. My son loves Power Rangers, of course, so I did it for him. And my wife is being the Pink Ranger, and then he decided he wants to be a Stormtrooper because he's obsessed with Stormtroopers. All right, so let's get started. You can put your questions in chat, and Jeremy will start going through them, and he'll send them my way, and you know, we'll just do the normal thing. And of course, you can ask any questions you want. If you have, you know, training questions, diet questions, supplementation, marketing, business, I don't care, personal stuff, really, ask anything. And Jeremy will just grab all kinds of things. And if you have funny questions, then throw them in there too, because he likes that shit. All right, here we go. First question. When finishing a bulk, should any slowing down be done before cutting, or is it best to jump right in? It depends on what you want to do. I mean, if you're done bulking and you're ready to cut, which you normally are, because if you've done it right, you are just basically disgusted with yourself. I mean, not literally, but I know that, like, I haven't bulked in a while just because it's not really what I want to do anymore with my body. I kind of have more or less the size that I want, but you know, at the end of my bulks, I just had to eat so much food that, you know, and I just felt like, God, I'm ready to just eat less food. So yes, you can just go right into a cut. I don't recommend slow cutting from a bulk because you're just going to make it take longer. You're not really actually going to benefit from it. You're not going to lose muscle by jumping into a deficit. I've written articles of, I've spoken about this in quite a few different articles. I've spoken about it on the podcast and all over the place in my books and blah, blah, blah. If you go on Muscle for Life and you search for the word rapid and you look at the article I wrote on rapid weight loss, I cite a study there that showed that it was about a 25% deficit, and it was done with athletes, with weightlifters. You're not going to lose muscle. If you're eating enough protein and you're not doing too much exercise, especially not doing too much cardio, you can be in an aggressive deficit where you can lose fat quickly and not lose any muscle, which is really what you want. As an experienced weightlifter, you're not going to build muscle, any muscle to speak of when you're in a calorie deficit. You just want to maintain it. And you maintain that by eating enough protein, not going too low on your calories, keeping your carbs up, and you know, continuing hitting heavy weights in the gym. So I recommend when you're done bulking, if you're ready to go into a cut, just go. And you know, you also have that benefit of that when you're done bulking, you're eating as much food as you possibly can, essentially, and you're still only gaining a little bit of weight. So, you know, in the course of your bulk, if you went from 3,000 calories a day to 4,000 calories a day, which is more or less what happens when I bulk, that means you get to start your cut back down at like 3,000 calories a day, which is pretty cool. And then, you know, work them on down. So, next question. How long did it take you to start noticing viewers to your website? I'm working on my own health blog. I mean, that's an unfair question because we started Muscle for Life, Jeremy and I, in March of 2013, but we already had a base. Like we had a site before that we didn't care about, to be fair. I don't even remember the traffic numbers on it. I didn't do anything with it. It was called buildhealthymuscle.com. And then when we decided, all right, we really want to go for this whole thing, then we started building Muscle for Life and blah, blah, blah. So the growth on Muscle for Life was very rapid. Jeremy, do you remember what the first month was? Yeah, I think you're right. So we got about 30,000 visits in the first month alone. And that's because I already had a bit of a platform, because I had already sold a lot of books. And, you know, obviously there were people out there, there was some buzz or whatever. So, that's not really a fair, you know, that's not a benchmark that I put out there. I think a better benchmark is if you look what Neil Patel is doing with his health blog. If you want to follow that, go to neilpatel.com, N-E-I-L, Patel, P-A-T-E-L. Oh, does he blog about on Quick Sprout? Okay. Well, it's either Quick Sprout, which is just how it sounds, Quick Sprout, or neilpatel.com. He started a health blog from scratch. And, how long ago, Jeremy, was that? Is that like six months ago? I want to say like 4 to 6 months ago. And I think he's at 100,000 visits a month now. And he's pumping out content. And, you know, he knows what he's doing, obviously. But that's a much more realistic, and that's being aggressive. Like if you can hit 100,000 visits a month within your first 6 months, that's impressive. That means you really know what you're doing. So as a resource for that, I highly recommend Neil's stuff in general. Jeremy and I also know him personally. We're not like super close, but he's helped us. He's a very nice guy, very helpful guy. And, he really knows what he's doing with really all things internet marketing. He has areas where he's very, very, that's his personal expertise, but he knows a bit of everything, and he knows people that have a lot of their, like the things that he's not super strong in, let's say copywriting, he knows the best copywriters out there. So, you know, anyway, quicksprout.com, neilpatel.com, go check it out and put his, just put his strategies into use. They work. I mean, it's really, that's, we kind of base everything we're doing is, I wouldn't say it all comes from Neil, but you know, Muscle for Life right now gets about 1.3 million visits a month. A large, very, very large percentage is from Google. And in terms of SEO, we basically just do what Neil says. And it's not even like, ooh, we have this secret, you know, connection, or we're doing stuff that he doesn't talk about on his website. We're just doing exactly what he says on his website. So, yes, I think that's it for that question. All right, next question. What role does Jeremy play within the company? Oh, Jeremy, picking one for me to talk him up. Besides looking pretty, that's what he put in there. Yes, besides looking pretty, Jeremy has his hands in a lot of stuff. I'd say his, like, the real, what's that? He mostly has his hands in my pants, but you know, we're not going to go into that right now. His real focus is the marketing side of what we do. Although again, he does have his hands in a bit of everything, like the coaching service that, you know, we were rolling out, which is going very well. We have 10 people, which we wanted to limit it to 10 people before we really roll it out to make sure that everything is the way that we want it. And we're able to deliver the service that we envision. He helped put all that together. But I would say like where his specialty really is, or where he's kind of niched into, is just everything that we're doing both on Muscle for Life and Legion, to market and sell. I do the copywriting. He does all the design. Like we're rolling out a new website, actually new websites, plural, for both, one for Legion and one for MFL. By the end of the year, they'll both be up. Legion first. Those have been like his babies for the last several months. It's a big undertaking to really do it right. And as you'll see, like the websites we have now are fine, but these new websites are so much better. I mean, it's just on another level. So it's hard to say like, oh, Jeremy just does this, because he has his hands in a lot of things, but, the majority of his work centers around how do we sell more stuff, basically. And that's from a strategic side, like what are some new bright ideas? Because marketing is a very creative type of activity. A lot of it is just taking a look at what you have and going, all right, how can I get more out of this? And, you know, we also are a little bit, I mean, it's great to sell things, but we also have a personal integrity that we want to uphold too, in terms of quality of products and tactics that we're not willing to do, even though, you know, things that we could make a lot of money doing that, but we just wouldn't feel it would be, you know, it wouldn't be how we would want to be sold to. So, you know, those are some constraints as well. But, anyways, that's kind of a vague answer, but, honestly, like it's a pretty small group. There's 7 of us. And to handle all of Legion and all of Muscle for Life and all the other random app things that we're involved in and all kinds of shit. So, you know, people have like their primary areas of work, but then there's some overlap depending on what needs to get done. You know, like the Shredded Chef, update, Jeremy has been helping a lot with that, overseeing. He's going to be, we're going to put him in the book as the art director? Yeah, the art director, because he is, if you've been following any social media, so you see like we're doing photo shoots and for food and stuff. So he's been basically overseeing that, and you know, he's super into cooking. And so it's been his vision on the, how we want it all to look and the style of things. And so, yeah, everything that I'm involved in, Jeremy's involved in some way. All right, next question. So I'm 22 years old and had my testosterone tested at 332 NGDL, which I think is pretty low. I'm following your BLS program and trying to cut to 10% body fat. I think it could be low dietary fat intake, but around 20% of my calorie intake comes from fat. What do you think I should do? Well, there are some different things to take into account here. This is good timing, because I would go read the article that I just wrote on Legion, the Legion blog, how to increase your testosterone. It's like how to actually increase your testosterone, how not to. So you can see that it's probably not your dietary fat intake. You could go on a higher fat diet and probably see a small increase in testosterone. Maybe you could get up to 400 or something like that, but it's not going to be like, oh, from 330 to 800 because you are eating more fat. In terms of what your body needs for its health reasons, in terms of dietary fat, which would include hormone production, is probably about 0.3 grams per pound of fat-free mass, which is everything that's not fat in your body. So as you can see, that's just not that much. And when you're in a calorie deficit as well, this is a limited, you know, time where you're restricting your fat. You're not even restricting it. You're keeping it right at about that level, which is where I put it in the formulas and the books and so forth. But again, it's only for a certain period of time. And then, you know, you introduce some more fat into your diet. So, you know, there are several things. One, being in a calorie deficit depresses testosterone levels, period. It does. Your cortisol levels are going to be higher. That alone, testosterone and cortisol have an inverse relationship. So the higher your cortisol levels are in general, the lower your testosterone levels are going to be. Also, testosterone tests higher. It's in the morning, Jeremy. Because your cortisol levels are higher, test is going to test lower. It's highest in the morning. What's that? Oh, okay. So it depends on when you're getting tested. In the morning, it's going to be higher. I didn't remember on, I've read so many things sometimes, like little random details, or what was it that, or was it that? So when you got tested matters, and you know, other things, if, I mean, that definitely how high is your cortisol is going to be a big thing. If your cortisol is high, then that alone can cause a very low, T. So test. And also, I mean, given, honestly, that's the low end of normal, and depends on where your free testosterone levels are, which is going to depend on your sex hormone binding, so your SHBG and your albumin levels. So you could have, you know, someone could have high testosterone, like you could have, let's say, 900 NGDL, but because your SHBG levels are high, your free testosterone could actually be quite low, whereas somebody else could be, let's say, more mid-range on testosterone, but they have low normal levels of SHBG, especially SHBG. Albumin is less of an issue because the testosterone can disassociate from it, but SHBG, once it's locked into that protein, it's done. It's not bioavailable anymore. So someone could be middle of the range, but actually have higher free testosterone, which is really what we're looking at. But free testosterone is probably generally about 2 or 3% of your total testosterone. So given your test, I would say that it's the lower end of normal. I mean, given your age, actually, it would be a little bit considered low. I think the low end of normal for your age is about 400 NGDL. When you start getting below that number is when you start seeing symptoms of low testosterone at your age. A middle-aged person could be at 300s and actually be okay. So go check out the article that I wrote for Legion, and I talk about there some natural things you can do to raise your testosterone levels. And I highly recommend that you don't just turn to drugs. I mean, right now, TRT is very popular. Getting on TRT is, you know, it's a lot of doctors. I mean, you could just go to them and say, hey, I think I have low testosterone, and they would prescribe you right away. And I just recommend you don't do that, especially at your age. I guarantee you there are things you can do with your lifestyle that can dramatically improve it. And it might even be just coming out of a calorie deficit and raising your dietary fat a little bit. And also, like, your exercise schedule matters a lot. Are you overtraining? How much exercise are you doing? Because if you're doing way too much exercise, that's going to chronically elevate your cortisol levels, which is going to depress your testosterone levels even more. So you have the calorie deficit and the overtraining. That's my recommendation. Go check out the article and really dig into it, and don't just go jump on drugs, because what'll happen is you're going to find it very hard to come off, basically. That's what's most likely going to occur, where it's going to become easy to just stay on, and you're going to, you know, have psychological, you're running into psychological addiction. And that's, you know, I've spoken with a lot of guys that have done not just TRT, but done, you know, heavier steroids. And the guys that are like most honest about it, that's the most common thing they say, that why they regret getting on steroids is when they're off steroids now, things like when they're on steroids, they just feel invincible. And when they're off now, they hate the feeling of being natty, basically. So, hopefully that helps you on with that. All right. Next question. How long does it take to get a new body fat set point? I've only been once under 10% body fat, and my body was craving like crazy until I got above 10% again. Is there a way to stay under 10% and not be hungry all the time? That's a good question. And I think that's something that I don't run into, but I know it's out there. Jeremy, you run into that same thing, right? Yeah, Jeremy runs into the same thing where there's a point where he starts getting under 10% and his body is almost like it just doesn't want, it's like, no, like eat more food. I want to be fatter. Like stop it. And, you know, it's hard. There's no like off the top of my head, any relevant type of, oh, well, you know, here's this body of research that shows us this is how it really works. I've written an article on body fat set point where there's a lot of factors involved. And the long story short is like the longer you stay at a body fat percentage range, the more likely it is that your body is going to adapt to that as the new normal. But for sure, some of the like, I can say that the people that I can think of that have done it successfully have, you know, well, I wouldn't say one for one, but there are some things you can do that increase the likelihood that you're going to be able to comfortably maintain that sub 10. And that's going to be one, your diet. You know, as you probably know, I'm not like a huge detractor of clean eating, and I'm not like one of those if it fits your macros people that's eating Oreo ice cream every day and, you know, showing off on Instagram about how I can eat this shit and still stay lean. The vast majority of my calories actually come from nutritious foods. A lot of fruit, a lot of vegetables, a lot of just nutritious foods, high quality proteins. Yes, I have some sugar every day. I'm really into chocolate, so I'll usually do chocolate, but sometimes I'll change that up and I'll, you know, make some desserts or things at home or whatever. But my point with that is, and this is really anecdotal. This is not, I'm not, you know, again, there isn't like some, at least I don't know of any research that's just simple, like, oh yeah, well, there's just one here. Here's five studies that break it all down. But one, making sure that you're not, deficient in any micronutrients, making sure that your body's getting all the micronutrients that it needs seems to be, a part of it. Maintaining high insulin sensitivity levels seems to be a part of it. That probably is a big part for me personally, where I am naturally a very insulin, I have low carbohydrate sensitivity. I have very high insulin sensitivity levels. I've also been, I mean, I grew up playing sports. I've been weightlifting for long, you know, 10, 11, oh, shit, I mean, 12 years now, actually. I've had a good diet for a long, 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 long time now. So a lot of those things do work to my advantage. But you can't, so there's that, maintaining good insulin sensitivity. And you do that by really, I mean, staying lean alone and training your muscles are probably like, and doing some cardio, are the major things that you can do to improve your insulin sensitivity. There, of course, are certain supplements, stuff like berberine. It's very good for that. Fish oil is good for that. But I believe even spirulina is good for that as well. And, which I take all those things. I actually don't take berberine, but I do take fish oil and spirulina and then other, there's some stuff in Triumph as well that can improve in our multivitamin Triumph that improves insulin sensitivity. And high protein diet is important, but I'm sure you know that if you're not eating enough protein, you're going to run into hunger issues. High carb is going to be better for you, especially if you're training regularly. If you're like most people, you're going to be less hungry on a high carb diet. And that means by high carb, I mean, me personally, I just keep my fat around that 0.3 to 0.4 grams per pound of fat free mass, or about 0.3 grams per pound, 0.35. And I eat about a gram of protein per pound per day. And I get all the rest of my calories from carbs because it's very satiating. It helps maintain muscle. It helps keep cortisol levels down. So again, I mean, there are a lot of factors involved in this question. It really is kind of circumstantial. This is where, like, if we were emailing, I would ask you some specific questions regarding what are you actually doing. But you know, I can say the people that have been most miserable that I've spoken with that try to stay lean are low carb people. People that try to, you have the extreme like keto, or you just have the more like paleo type low carb. One for one, I've spoken to a lot of people. It's very, very rare that I come across a low carb person that's able to stay lean and feel good and not be hungry all the time and have good workouts and so forth. And I've spoken to a lot of low carb people that have tried it and then with, you know, taking my advice, like, stop that. Let's get you some carbs. And then all of a sudden they feel way better. In a lot of cases, they actually end up, probably due to cortisol levels coming down, they end up looking leaner with more carbs because my guess is just holding less water, because the higher cortisol levels are, the more water you hold. So, and then one last thing before we move on to the next question is, don't discount the psychological aspect too. I mean, again, that's an area where me personally, I don't have great tips for that because I don't have those issues with food. I don't feel compelled to eat things or not eat things. I kind of just stick to my numbers every day. And if I am going to go over, it's kind of just a conscious thing. Like, I'm going to go out to this restaurant and I'm going to be in a surplus today. And that's just the way it is. But, you know, though that can be hard to differentiate from the physical. I believe, what was it? I read somewhere, I think it was in a random book. This kind of comes to mind, that the difference between physical hunger, which is the hunger pangs, and psychological hunger, which is just the desire to eat. I think that's what it is, right, Jeremy? The physical, I don't remember which book that was, the physical and psychological aspects of hunger. So the physical hunger is like in your stomach, like the actual hunger pangs. Yeah, yeah. And then psychological hunger is like the desire to eat. I don't remember exactly. I don't remember exactly. Sorry. I don't. Yeah. No, I just mean the principle. I think that's what it was. It's just that the difference between physically being hungry and mentally being hungry, basically, where you just have a desire to eat, even though you're not physically, like, you don't have physical hunger symptoms, you just want to eat. So, you know, people, you know, you can run into that when you start getting lean. Also, even psychologically, you start to get more lenient with yourself. Like, well, I'm lean, I can eat more food. And then it increases the desire for food. And that can become a dwindling spiral. And then it's just like, well, I just want to eat everything. And then once you already ate a little bit, I already fucked it up anyway. And then it turns into a binge and so forth. So go, if you haven't read the article yet, go on Muscle for Life and search for set point, two words, and you can read my article on it to get a bit more information on it. It's just, it's not an exact, or, you know, from all this reading that I've done on it, there just isn't like a neat, tidy little science-based answer for that, because it seems to vary so much from person to person. All right, next question. When bulking, should I continue to eat a surplus of calories? During the week, I am deloading, not lifting. I would say yeah, just because, you know, your body's still going to be recovering at least from part of what you did the week before. So there's no reason not to. It's not like you're going to be gaining a bunch more fat because you're in a slight surplus on a week that you're not lifting. You can also can do a bit of cardio on that week as well. There's no necessarily, if you are doing cardio, there's no reason to just drop that out. But there's also nothing wrong with, if you're sick of eating, which if you've been bulking for a bit, you probably are being a bit tired of eating so much food every day. It can feel nice to just drop down to TDE, you know what I mean? Which if you're not lifting is going to be at least a couple, you know, 200-300 calories lower every day, and just almost get a little break from having to eat all that food. I've done it both ways when I've bulked in the past, and I really just played it by ear how I felt. If I was enjoying my diet and everything was going fine, I would just continue as normal. But if I was, you know, if it's already been months and I just am really sick of eating, then, you know, drop down to TDE. All right. So next question. When bulking, I know you recommend a deload week about every 8 weeks. I've reached the 10-week mark since my last week off, and I'm really in a groove right now. I've been making lots of progress in strength in the last few weeks. Would you still recommend a deload, or should I keep going? Definitely keep going. You're going to find that in a bulk, like I've worked out with guys, especially people that are new to weightlifting, that went 6, 7, 8 months without deloading. And like you, they're just like, you know, after they started asking and working out with me, and they're like, I haven't even taken a deload. And I'm just like, if you feel good, keep going. There's no reason. The point of the deload really is when you start, you're just grinding, and, you know, your workouts feel very heavy. Your energy levels are low. Your sleep is not as good. Your motivation is waning. That's when it's time to deload. But when I see that when with bulking in particular, where people are able to go quite a bit longer. And, you know, so in cutting, you'll probably find you 8 or 10 weeks, it'll be time to take a break. And you may even want to increase your food intake a little bit on that week as well. A lot of people like to do that. It's not necessary, but again, it just gives the body a full break, like give it a couple hundred more calories every day and no lifting, just gives your whole system a break. All right, next question. Hey, Mike, the second you release your app, the sales for all your supplements will go through the roof. You will sell the book much quicker, and the app will become your first step in earning a ton of money. What are you planning to do with all the money? And speaking of the Stacked app, when's it going to be on the App Store? I'm going to answer this in reverse order. So the app, I can't say for sure when it's going to be on the app, when it's going to be available for sale. The developers have said they're shooting for December, January to be fully done, beta testing done, everything, which I'm happy with. I mean, again, as you probably know, if you've been following the project at all, it's taking longer than it should, which actually reminds me, I'm going to send an email out to everybody on the list just to keep you up to date. The beta is coming. It's close. I want the workout section to be pretty like rock solid with me, like where I'm happy with it and I can't break it and everything works the way I want it to work before I start rolling it out. Cause that's really the most important part of the app. But anyway, so, you know, the developer they had working on it, it was just going slow and he was getting a bit sloppy in his work. Now, fortunately, I had the code audited by a third party firm, a company that's well established. They checked out all the code. They said, this is good code. So now they have another developer, the company I'm working with, they have another developer now that is, he's kicking ass. He's doing great. So, you know, this is one of those things, I'm just as annoyed as anybody else waiting for it, but I've just learned through doing everything that we've done, you know, everything takes too long, costs too much money. there are always stupid problems and stupid people that do stupid things. And so you just keep on going and you just don't give up, basically. You just go, okay, what do we do now? All right, here's what we do. All right, let's go do that. And then something else. Okay, what do we do now? Let's go do that. So again, we're shooting for a December, January release. And I think that's realistic given where it's at right now, because once the workout section is done, the rest of the app, it's just not that much. Like the whole journal section, it's going to be great, but it's technically not that complicated. Workouts is what is complicated, because it also workouts ties into every other aspect of the app. So it's just, there's a lot of moving parts in it. So that's that. I know the app's going to sell well, more money. I don't know. I have to buy a house. So there, I'll buy a house. And, that's what I'll do with the money. I don't know. I'm not one to, if anybody follows me on social media or anything, like I never post about anything trying to show off money. I never will. It's just not, I think it's actually really fucking lame, especially when it's just, I don't understand the point of it. I don't understand the point of trying to make people, is it to make other people jealous? If that's, some people are into that. I'm not into that. If it's just to get it, just to show, like, to say what, like, look at me, I'm better. Like, I don't feel any need to do that. I don't know, or just to get admiration from people for stuff. Like, I'm much more interested in, I think it's, for me, a compliment on the work that we're all doing here, whether it be the books or the supplements or the app or the websites or all that, that's more gratifying to me than somebody saying, oh, what a cool car you have or whatever. I just don't really care about that. So I'll find something to do with money. There's always something to do with it. All right, let's go to the next question. What do you think about knee sleeves? Are they good to prevent knee injury? That's a good question. I actually like knee sleeves. Not so much for the point of preventing injury per se, but they keep your joints warm. And I've written about it, and I use Reband. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. Rehband, I believe. And they're blue. They feel like neoprene or something. And I just like them because they keep my joints warm in between sets, which I find is just comfortable, actually. They're not like knee wraps, which you can wrap your knees and like squat more weight, for instance, but it's known, like that's been scientifically proven, that it's not good for your joints to do that. Knee sleeves, on the other hand, are not good for your joints, but they're not as effective in terms of improving your squat performance as straight wrapping your knees. But I don't do knee wraps, because why would I? It doesn't really make sense for me with what I'm doing. I'm not powerlifting. I'm not in competitions or something like that. So I use sleeves, and I don't use elbow sleeves. I never really found. I just like the knee sleeves for squatting and for deadlifting for that reason. It just keeps my joints feeling like nice and cozy, I guess. And maybe it provides a little bit of structural support. It does feel like everything is just locked in and warm and tight. So I do recommend you get some. I think you'll like them. Just like weightlifting shoes, for instance. Of course, it's not necessary to have any weightlifting shoes, but I think that you will really like them for heavy squatting. I didn't use any special weightlifting shoes for a long time, for years and years. I only started using them maybe about a year ago. And I would just squat in, plain old flat shoes, or some Nike Flyknits is what I've been using for a while. Before that, I've used Innovates. I've used New Balance, like just simple flat sole. And those are fine, but what I like about now, I use Adipowers for squatting, is there's definitely, they feel more stable because they're wider. The body, like the heel, it's a wide heel, and it's rock solid, so it feels very stable. Your foot doesn't squish down, it doesn't rock at all. It's just really nice. Also, a little bit of heel elevation helps with squat depth. Obviously, you don't want your heels very raised, but they're up a little bit. And I find that with those shoes, I'm really able to almost like torque my feet against the outside of the shoe, and really help keep my knees in position where they need to be. So I'm a fan of weightlifting shoes, similar to the knee bands or knee wraps. Not necessary, but it makes for a better squatting experience. So that's that. Yeah, it should. Will Stack be available in the UK store? I don't know why it wouldn't be. I know that my familiarity with Apple is iBooks, selling books through iBooks, and it's very simple. Actually, we have Bigger, Leaner, Stronger as a book. It's an app just for people that don't that want it that way, basically. So if the Bigger Leaner Stronger book app is available on the UK store, then yes. I mean, I don't think there's any reason why it won't be. If the BLS, and I have TLS as a book app as well, if those aren't available in the UK store, then I'll figure out how to do it because I want it obviously everywhere. All right, next question. When will you establish your national distribution? Do you ship to freight forwarders? Yeah, we can definitely ship to freight forwarders. Right, Jeremy, we can do that as long as it's specified how. Yeah, I'm sure we can. If you email us, I'm sure if we can figure it out, we will. I think we've done it before. I think it's very simple. I think you just send them a bunch of stuff and, you know, there's a little bit of. Yeah, we've done it before. That's right. To some people in Miami and then it went to Brazil. So we can definitely look into that. If you just shoot us an email, we'll help you out with that. And then in terms of international distribution, it will be next year. In terms of priority, it's going to be Canada and the UK first. We should be able to handle Europe and the UK at the same time. The only reason why we're not pursuing it right now is because we have our hands very full with what we're doing. We have this new website coming, which is going to have also stacks, and because we have new products, we have two new products coming. We have a sleep product coming. We have, we actually have multiple. It's not just two. We have sleep product. We have greens product. We have new protein. We have, all together, right? We're doing the Whey Plus a little bit differently. And then we're doing 5-pound protein jugs. We have an unflavored recharge coming. So you can just mix it with, you know, your post-workout shake or whatever you want. So it doesn't have any flavor. So we have all these things coming, a new website coming, a subscription service on the website coming where it's going to be 20% off your order and you'll be able to do a monthly subscribe and save thing like Amazon. And anyway, so we just have so many things that we're still like actually just keeping up with demand as it is right now. But next year we're definitely be looking at international distribution. I know that there are some different ways to do it and just going to have to really take the time to dive into it and do my research and my due diligence and find out what's really the best way to do it. So it's going to be affordable for everybody and not just going to be a big pain in the ass, basically. But for now, we did just put something up where, Jeremy ran numbers and basically like, if you on all orders over $250 or $250 and over, Jeremy? Yeah, $250 and up. If you're in Canada or the UK, which is where the majority of our international customers are, where they're from, the shipping is 50% off. So we're eating half the shipping cost basically for on orders $250 and up, which means, you know, that you can stock up and then or get friends together. And then when you look at the shipping in terms of a per unit basis, it actually becomes pretty affordable. So that was like that's our solution. But we are definitely going to be pursuing international distribution seriously. I mean, the obvious countries are Canada, UK, all of Europe, at least Western Europe, Australia, possibly even Brazil, because I sell a lot of books in Brazil as well. So it's just one thing at a time. Mike, how did you get your eyes so blue? Is there a special supplement stack that you're taking for that? Yeah, there's this company Legion, and if you buy all their supplements, then it should do the trick. If you take two servings of everything a day, trust me, and your dick will get really big. That's a funny question. I don't know. Genetics. Thanks, Dad. My dad has super blue eyes. All right, next question. So can you address waist size after cutting and then reverse dieting? I had my pants tailored, assuming I'd get big again, but it's been 9 weeks since starting the reverse diet and the inches haven't come back on. Will they ever? Not that I want them to. It's a good question, actually. So just to catch everybody up quickly, so reverse dieting is just when you're done cutting, instead of just going back to, you know, how you're eating before you're cutting, you slowly increase your calories up to, you know, your TDE, where what you're burning. And there are a couple of reasons to do that. One, when you're at the end of a cut, you've been in a deficit for a while, your body is really primed to store fat as efficiently as possible, basically. So the worst thing to do is end a cut and be like, fuck yeah, diet's done, and then just start pounding food. You will gain fat very quickly. The reverse diet is a simple protocol to prevent that from happening, basically, where you're raising your caloric intake by your daily intake by about 150 calories. And then you eat that amount for about a week, and then you do it again. You eat that for a week and so forth until you're up to a normal calorie intake, no longer in a deficit. And then you can even continue and keep on pushing it if you want. But the great thing about it also is that, like the person asking this question has experienced, is you don't gain any fat. You just don't. A lot of people actually, when they, especially when they're like a few weeks into the reverse diet, they find that they even look leaner now that they're eating, let's say 300-400 more calories per day. And again, that's not like, yes, they're probably still in a slight deficit, so they're still losing a little bit of fat, and that is going to contribute to that leanness. But also, as you are eating more food, your cortisol levels come down, you hold less water, and especially that's very noticeable if you're lean. If you're a guy and you're under 10% body fat, if you're a girl under 20% body fat, and you are if your cortisol levels were to, let's say, spike for a day or two, let's say you don't sleep enough, right, which can do it for a couple days, you will notice this. You will see it, the little bit of extra water. It's just like a little film of blurriness that'll be over you, right? And then on the flip side of that, if you're dealing with that and it goes away, you'll see that too. You will notice it right away when you get very lean. So the answer to the question is no, your waist should stay the same. I mean, waist measurement at the navel is a very reliable indicator of body fat levels rising or falling. So if your waist is expanding over time, you are gaining fat. If it is shrinking over time, you're losing fat. That's a good thing just to keep in mind. Like if you are new to weightlifting, you need to lose weight, you're going to build muscle while you lose fat. And so, just paying attention to the scale is not enough, because you're going to be 4 weeks into what you're doing and you're going to be down a pound, which would suck normally, but you're like, but I've lost, you know, X millimeters or whatever on my, or centimeters on my waist, and my pants are, everything is loose. What's going on? I look leaner in the mirror. It's that you are losing fat, but then you're replacing some of that weight with muscle. It's not going to be a 1-to-1, obviously. You can lose fat faster than you can build muscle, even when you're new to weightlifting. But keeping a waist measurement is, and also like a caliper measurement. If you go to Muscle for Life and you search for body composition, you can see an article I put together that shows how to determine your body fat percentage and stuff like that. So keeping caliper readings and waist measurements in addition to weight, it gives you a bigger, more complete picture of what's going on with your body. So no, your waist shouldn't change. Now, where of course it would change is there's a point where you keep increasing your caloric intake to where you're now in a surplus and you start storing fat, then you will see your waist expanding. But until then, you can just keep on increasing your food intake. And I do recommend you do that. Keep going and see how high. I mean, that's the ideal situation, is where you're eating as much food as you can without gaining fat, unless you want to gain fat, unless you're bulking. But if you're trying to go into a maintain, then you really want to be able to eat as much food as you can without gaining fat. It's just better that way, because then in the future, if you do want to start bulking, your metabolism is basically running as fast as it can, in a sense. And then, you know, you put some more food. And then when it comes time to cut, you're not starting from like a half gimped, you know, caloric intake, where you really should be eating a couple hundred calories more per day, and your body could deal with that. But you never really got there. So now you have to cut your calories, especially low, and you cut. You just don't want to get into that. You don't want to get into this. I've seen this. It becomes it's not really a vicious type of cycle, but people will get stuck in these low caloric intake ranges by not properly reverse dieting out of a cut, because they're afraid to eat more food. So they do their cut perfectly. They reduce their caloric intake as necessary. They reach their goal and they're afraid to eat more. So they kind of just hang out in this low area and the body continues to adapt, continues to drive energy expenditure down, to where it reaches this homeostasis or close enough to it where you're not really losing much fat anymore, but you're not eating as much food as you should. Your body is still fighting to reduce energy output, energy expenditure. Instead, you want to come out of a cut, reverse diet properly, get your caloric intake back up to where it needs to be. You are not going to gain fat if you do it right. And then you're in the clear. Then you get to decide, what do you want to do from there? Do you want to maintain? Cool. There are different ways you can do that. Do you want to bulk? That's very simple. No reason to go back into cutting, obviously, but I think that's a good thorough answer to that question. Hopefully that helps. All right, next question. Pre-workout nutrition for bulking if I work out very early in the morning. Good question. When I was bulking, I would do a cup of rice milk, and I'd mix protein powder in it, because delicious. Rice milk is a magical mystery when you mix it with protein. It is so good. By itself, you drink it, be like, shit sucks. Why is rice milk? Mix it with protein, and it's one of those, like, the sum is greater than the parts by far. Protein powder in water can be like, eh, that doesn't really taste very good. Rice milk by itself is kind of like, eh, who would want to drink that together? You're like, holy shit, that's good. So I would do like a cup of rice milk and a scoop of protein, and I would do a banana as well. So that's about 50 carb. And sometimes, like before my deadlifting and squatting, I would also do either another cup of rice milk, which was really just for the carbs. I do another 25 grams of carbs, basically. So I get 75 grams of carbs before I train, 30 minutes before I work out. So I would wake up first thing. That's what I do. I'd eat my food, go to the bathroom, get ready to go, and I'd be at the gym about 30 minutes later. And that will give you the full ergogenic benefits, basically, of carbs. And you will lift more weights with carbs. I don't recommend fasted training if you're bulking. It's kind of – you're going to be stronger with pre-workout carbs. So, and that's kind of what we're trying to do here when we're bulking, is getting as strong as possible. We're trying to, you know, progress as much as we can. You know, the only reason to bulk, or sorry, to train fasted when you bulk would be is if you just really like it. So, keep that in mind. And, you know, choose your carbs, whatever you want. It doesn't, I mean, I don't care if it's the morning, eat a baked potato. I don't give a shit. Just go for, you know, anywhere from like, you know, 50 to, 75 grams of carbs before you train. And for girls, I would probably, it depends on how many carbs you're eating in a day. You might want to do something more like 25 to 50 grams. So you don't leave yourself with no carbs for the rest of the day, basically. But I would say 30 grams is probably good if you're going to just middle recommendation for everybody. Have some protein as well, of course. Also, a little tip, have your pre-workout as well if you're doing that, because you're going to find that if you have food in you, it's going to take a little bit more until you feel it. So give yourself a good 20 or 30 minutes with the caffeine to make sure that, you know, because you want it kind of where it's the caffeine is peaking for when you start lifting. All right, next question. Hey, Mike, I'm 6 feet tall, 168 pounds, former gymnast. I'm repping 355 on deadlifts, nice, and 90 pounds on weighted pulls. Weighted pull-ups. But I only bench 205. That's really not that bad. Is that sort of imbalance, something to worry about? Try to modify my training to, yeah, it is a little bit low, to emphasize chest or just be patient. Now, to be fair, like, you're going to find upper body progresses slower than lower body, period. It just does. I mean, our legs are our biggest muscle group in the body. They can generate a lot of power, a lot of force. They respond very well to heavy overload. Whereas, you know, the pecs are a much smaller muscle group. Look at the press. The shoulders are a small muscle group. The lats are involved, very small muscle group. It just takes time. But what you can do here is, yeah, I would say it depends on, like, I don't know what kind of training you're doing. If you're doing my program, then you'd be doing your upper body essentially twice a week, where I don't recommend more than that. I mean, it's really just not – You only can train so much, even when you're doing everything right. And the only thing you could, you know, there are other styles of training out there. There's stuff like the Bulgarian method, for instance, where you're doing a bench press, or you're doing, if you're doing it for squat, you'd be squatting every day or bench pressing every day. So, there are things like that out there, but, you know, not that there's anything wrong with that. I just wouldn't, I'd say that the majority of the progress you're going to make is just sticking to the principles, which is going to be you're emphasizing your heavy weightlifting. You can do some higher rep stuff, but your core of your program is heavy weightlifting. You're not overtraining. You're not overdoing it. And your diet is on point, and you're just staying consistent. You're not missing workouts. You're pushing hard in your workouts. You know, you're really going for those extra reps. You're really trying to hit the top of your rep ranges so you can add that weight and progress. So I would say that, yeah, your bench is a little bit low. Those are pretty solid numbers, on the deadlift, given your size. I would also, though, question what your diet's like, given your weight, 6 feet, 168 pounds. I'm 6'2", 190 pounds. So just thinking with that, if you're not in a calorie surplus, you're going to find that, it's going to be very hard to progress. I found personally with my body that, especially with the smaller muscle groups, it was very hard to progress unless I was in a surplus. I made the most progress on my bench press, on all of my shoulder work, with my arms, was always in a surplus. If I in a deficit, that would be the first areas. Those would be the first areas that I would lose strength. Not much, but I'd lose a rep or two, and it would just stick there. And even when I'm in this maintain mode that I'm in right now, it is different to be in a surplus. It just is. So I understand. My bench has I've never benched more than 295. Now, to be fair, I haven't pushed myself to try to go beyond that because that was my last bulk was 295 for two or three or something like that. And I haven't bulked since then. And I probably don't really plan on bulking again, to be honest. But I have very long arms, which work against me. So there is that. There's some biomechanics involved as well. But, I would say that make sure you're in a calorie surplus. Train your chest twice a week. You can do, if you're doing my program, then you're doing your 9 heavy sets on one day and you're doing three lighter sets, you know, several days later. There's not much more you can do on that. And you know, if one other tip actually I can throw out there that has helped with my chest development has been emphasizing dumbbell and barbell training alternatively. So like I went for 6 months, for instance, where I only did heavy dumbbell pressing because my dumbbell were just behind. So I just dumbbell pressed and I got strong on my dumbbell pressing and I went back to barbell pressing after not doing a single barbell press for 6 months. And I don't even know if I lost any strength. I was maybe like 2 reps down where I was before. And then I quickly progressed beyond that because of all the dumbbell pressing I'd done. So that's a bit of an extreme. I wouldn't say you have to do that. But since then, what I've kind of like done myself and I've seen work well is where your workouts are predominantly dumbbell for 4, 6, even 8 weeks, where maybe it's 6 sets of dumbbell, 3 sets of barbell or something like that. And then you flip it around and they're predominantly barbell. And then the dumbbell work almost becomes supplementary or accessory. So that's also a tip that might be able to help. Okay. All right. So Jeremy says we have during questions or speed round. All right. So fast answers. Red Ranger, go. Mega, what's their big thing that they make? The Mechazord? I don't know. Yeah, we're doing that shit. It's coming. All right, so I'm pretty carb sensitive. I get tired when I eat 70 grams of carbs at a time, 70 plus grams. How should I adjust my carb intake on days I don't lift? What about the peri around workout carb intake? Also, I work out first thing in the morning if that affects what I should do with my carbs. This is a good question because carbs intake that's something you're going to have to get a good sense of your body. I guarantee you the longer you stay lean and the more weightlifting you do and cardio helps improve insulin sensitivity just in your entire body. It's in a dose dependent nature where like the more cardio you do, the better you're going to get in terms of insulin sensitivity. But of course you don't want to do way too much cardio that becomes counterproductive. Anyways, you're going to learn like you see that if you eat 70 grams or so, that seems to be a threshold for you, then, you know, I would say that on the days that you don't lift, again, ideally you would keep your carb intake as high as you can. But if it's uncomfortable, then lower it. You know what I mean? If you're finding you're groggy and, that's no fun. You just lower your carbs. There isn't like a simple, this is exactly, you know, rule of thumb for everybody kind of thing. 'Cause it's very different. For instance, my carb sensitivity is very, very, very low. So I can eat probably 400 or 500 grams of carbs in one go and just be fine. And maybe I'd get a little bit like, ooh, I ate a lot of food, but that's about it. Like every night I have 300 grams, give or take, of oatmeal and fruit, mainly oatmeal and fruit, actually. It's just a ton of oatmeal. And I do it with chocolate milk as well. So there's some sugar and shit and it's delicious. And I eat it at 10 p.m. or so. And then I just go back to work and it's like I didn't even eat anything. It doesn't even matter. So that's me learning my body. In your case, I would also ask what kind of carbs you're eating. You're going to find that if you have lower glycemic carbs, like in terms of either glycemic index or glycemic load, I know they're different, but low GI, if you want to just stick simple with the index, carbs, you're probably going to find that you get less of that reaction. It's not that the glycemic index matters all that much, but what you'll find is if you're eating nutritious carbs, they're generally going to be low GI. They just are because the all right, we're done. All right. So anyways, you're gonna have to check it out for yourself. That's kind of you want to eat as many carbs as you can, but you don't want to be falling asleep. So, you know, if you get lean, if you're not lean, get lean and keep on training. And in time, you're going to find that your body does better and better with carbs. All right. Next question. Monitor went off. Come on now. All right. Surefire way to see if your metabolism is damaged. Your metabolism is not damaged. You can't damage your metabolism. You can cause your body to burn less energy, but go, let's see, go check out my article on reverse dieting, on Muscle for Life. And you'll see, like, there was, if you look at the Minnesota starvation experiment, you had these guys that for, I believe it was for 6 months, they were eating about 1500 calories a day, burning 3000 plus calories a day, straight starvation status. Like, it was a mock prisoner of war camp. So these guys they looked like skeletons, some of them, by the end of it. And the worst reduction they saw in actual basal metabolic rate was like 14%. So your metabolism's not damaged. You probably just need to get a better handle on how much you're eating, and you might need to do some reverse dieting. And so go check out the article on reverse dieting. All right, next one. I don't notice the difference between fasted lifting and eating a bunch of carbs. Is this weird? No. I've heard that before. I do notice a difference personally. I just have a bit more energy. I find it, I notice it actually in my, I'm able to get more reps. It's not that my weight goes up necessarily with my carbs. I mean, it can depending on the circumstances, but I'll notice, like, it can be as a result of getting more reps, where like maybe I'll get 4 reps with something fasted and then I'll get 6 or even 7 reps with carbs. That's for me personally. But I do know some people, they say that they don't notice any difference, no performance enhancing benefits of carbohydrate intake. And, you know, that just is what it is. Doesn't mean anything's wrong. Pendlay rows versus bent over rows. I like Pendlay rows because they are the biggest range of motion, and I find that they make my back do the most work, basically. So and bent over rows are fine, but they also just encourage cheating because you start loading up weight, and then the range of motion becomes nothing. And I'm a fan of Pendlay rows. Question: is Christopher Walker Walken, whoever that censored Mike had on his podcast, right when he says the hops and beer in particular raise estrogen, lower testosterone? I honestly don't remember that. Drinking too much alcohol can. I think I'm. Yeah, no, I don't know. The hops and beer in particular, I don't know of any. I just wrote an article on testosterone, how to increase testosterone, and did quite a bit of research for it. I didn't come across anything like that. So I wouldn't worry about that. All right, next question. So what types of exercises do you recommend for a 14-year-old teenage boy who is playing hockey 4 to 5 times a week? Oh, that was me. When I was 14, I was playing hockey obsessively. My son is really lean and wants to bulk up. So that's actually, I mean, at that age, he could start weightlifting. It's not going to stunt growth. That's a myth. But what's that, Jeremy? Because of growth hormone? I could see that. Yeah, Jeremy was saying it actually helps with growth because of the growth hormone effects, which makes sense. But the thing with that you want to make sure is that he learns proper form, and that, you know, he's a young kid, and that he doesn't try to get into ego lifting and showing off to his friends and stuff and getting hurt. That's really actually the thing. So a simple place to start might be something like starting strength, a really simple 3 times a week, a very simple strength training program where he learns proper squatting, deadlifting, pressing would be a great place to start. If he's a little bit young for weightlifting and that's not, or if you're not comfortable with that, then bodyweight exercises is a great way to start. A good bodyweight type of program where, you know, he's doing a lot of, you can progress into harder things like pistol squats and so forth, and doing a lot of pull-ups and push-ups and things like that. But 14, you can definitely start weightlifting. Again, I would start with a good basic strength program like strong lifts or starting strength, and be a stickler on form. Make sure he really learns the importance of form. He doesn't have to be afraid of weightlifting at all, of course. You don't want to, like, go too far in that direction, but just that he knows that it's much more about lifting the weight properly than just trying to stack plates to show off to his friends or on YouTube or something. All right, next question. Once you have reached a muscle size you want, how do you keep on gaining strength without increasing muscle size? I'm glad you picked this one. Any routine suggestions or programs that are out there? This is a good question. Ironically, something I'm running into myself. So I'm pretty lean right now because I had to do a little cut for this photo shoot for the cover of this cookbook. And I was a bit leaner 2 years ago for a photo shoot that I did where I needed to be leaner because it was more of a bodybuilding type of thing, whereas the cookbook is more, yes, it's bodybuilding, but I don't want like crazy ab vascularity. I don't want to be too lean. It doesn't fit the look of what we're trying to do with this book. So I'm just like probably a good solid 7% or so. And, you know, I weighed 190 for that shoot. and I weighed 182 2 years ago. Yes, I was leaner 2 years ago, but not 8 pounds leaner, not 8 pounds of fat. So, you know, realistically, I probably, if I were to lose 3 pounds of fat right now, I'd be at where I was 2 years ago. So even that, I mean, 5 pounds of muscle gained in 2 years makes sense. That's really what you're looking when you're looking at a natural weightlifter. You're looking at about 2 to 3 pounds a year. But ironically, that has not been my focus. Like I've actually, I'm trying not to have that continue. I don't want in 3 years to be 6 pounds heavier in terms of muscle because it's not the look that I want. I'll take more calves. I'll take more shoulders, but I really don't want more in my upper legs. I already have trouble wearing jeans. I'd take some more separation. I think that looks cool, but, my upper body, my chest and my arms already, like if I don't stay lean, my arms just look retarded big. So, you know, this is a good question and it's something I'm starting to deal with myself. What I'm doing is, you know, my diet is around, I'm just on a maintained type of diet where I'm eating about my TDE every day. Obviously there's fluctuations and you can't determine your TDE with 100% accuracy, but, what it's looking like is if you keep on hitting heavy weightlifting, which is just what I like doing, you'll continue gaining muscle at some rate. So I may have to do, you know, I may have to dial back my volume a little bit, my weekly volume. I might have to go more for a pure strength type of approach. Not that you don't build muscle on strength training, but the lower volume, the lower weekly volume is gonna reduce. It's gonna, you know, result in less muscle growth over time. So that's something that, you know, I'm the guinea pig here. So I don't know. We'll see as it goes. But it's something I'm acutely aware of. I understand where you're coming from. So that's my thinking just based on what I know is going to be reducing weekly volume, but I can still keep the heavy lifting. So a strength approach might be the best thing. It's also fun, that type of training. All right, next. Hi, Mike. A couple of quick ones. What do you think about fitness trackers like Fitbit or Jawbone? Have you tested one? Yeah, I've tested quite a few. I think they're like kind of cool or whatever. I don't put any stock in the calories burned. Like there's no way that shit is accurate. In fact, I've actually seen a study. I don't remember what they studied, what they used in the study, but it was definitely not accurate. It was like 40% off or something. So if you just want to know if what's the whole thing right now, Jeremy, quantified self, if you're like into that thing where you just like to know how exactly what your sleep was and how many steps you took and whatever, cool. Go for it. But I wouldn't use that. I wouldn't use that for meal planning. Definitely not. I wouldn't just go, oh, my little thing says that I, you know, burned 3,000 calories walking today. So let's fucking go pound food. That's not that simple. So if you like it as a gimmick, go for it, but don't like use it to plan or determine your food intake. All right, next question. Have you seen the new research on meat causes cancer? Lane Norton made a video about it saying correlation does not equal causation. Yeah, go check out the examine.com. Go check out their blog. They wrote about it on the first time this went around and now on the second time around. Again, basically what Lane says is, and I even wrote about not this newest research, but the previous research. If you search Muscle for Life for meat, you'll see what I had to say about it. And it's kind of more of the same. Basically, don't eat a bunch of crap meats. If you're eating a ton of nitrate infested garbage and you're eating a ton of hot dogs and really processed overcooked meat and, you know, gas station beef jerky and shit, you might be increasing your risk of cancer. But if you're like the rest of us normal humans that don't do that, and you eat high quality foods and you have meat in your diet and you're exercising and you're taking care of your body, I mean, it, again, like Lane says, this is epidemiological. This is saying, well, there could be an association here, but there are a lot of potential confounders. So go over to examine.com, check out the latest blog article. They do a great job breaking this stuff down. They really know what they're talking about. Their team knows a lot more about all of this than I do for sure. They're smart. So check them out. All right. So next question. I'm under the constraints of a low budget and my current gym is limited to Smith machines for my compound exercises. I know this isn't ideal, but can I follow your BLS program under these constraints until a suitable gym is found? Yeah, you can. You can't really deadlift on a Smith machine unless they have – what are they called, Jeremy, where it's the bar moves laterally as well? Power rack? No, not power rack. Not a power rack. No, there's a name for it. Power cage. Maybe. Anyways, so you have the Smith machine where it's locked, it just moves vertically, but then you have these new Smith machines which also move laterally. They move, you know, toward and away, so you can deadlift on those. But if it's locked vertically, it doesn't really work for deadlifting, but you can front squat on it. Fine. Back squatting is a bit funky. It's, you're gonna have to put your knees in a weird position. So I would just front squat. You can front squat all day on a Smith machine and be okay. It's not ideal, but it's fine. You can bench press. Of course, you can military press, seated military press. Fine. There's a generic term for it. That sounds like a brand. Power rack. Was a power rack? Anyways, I don't know. Obviously a power rack is different as well, but so that's kind of, yes, you can. For the deadlifting, you're kind of shit out of luck, to be honest. You can try like I wouldn't even try dumbbells. It's just not going to be enough weight for you if you're a guy. So no deadlifting for now. But once you get into a proper gym, then you can start deadlifting. But in the meantime, you can definitely get rolling. Instead of deadlifting, you can do another exercise that's on the program, like barbell rows or dumbbell rows or T-bar rows or so forth. But once you can get into a proper gym, I would recommend that. All right, next question. So have you ever supplemented with breast milk? If not, would you? No, I didn't even think of that when my wife was pregnant. Maybe I was missing out on all kinds of crazy gains. No, I don't know. Breast milk, why? I mean, obviously there's like, what is it, a lot of collagen and stuff that's good for babies. And sure, do it. I mean, it's not going to hurt you. I don't think there's going to be any like great benefit to it. But YOLO, right? All right, next question. What can I do about lower back pain during deadlifts? I came back from my rest week, did my deadlifts, and my lower back was super sore. Now, you have to differentiate between soreness and pain. Soreness can happen. I mean, I've had that many times where, especially as I was moving up in weight and getting just heavier and heavier, where sometimes my lower back would be very sore, but it wasn't pain. That's different. Pain is like where you make a move and you're like, and then it shoots up or something like that. You know, soreness is just like, damn, my back is tight, it's sore. So soreness is to be expected, and you can do things to help that, obviously. Even just some simple stretching, foam rolling, making sure that you're working the soft tissues is going to help, making sure that you're doing, your diet is right, that you're eating enough protein, that's going to help. Creatine can reduce soreness, carnitine can reduce soreness, especially L-carnitine, L-tartrate in particular can. So pain is different, though. And I've had that as well. I mean, I've had where just for no good reason, really, after deadlifting, there's just like some pain. It's not like I injured myself. Nothing really happened. It's just tightness, muscle tightness, then put some pressure on a nerve and whatever. But the key with pain is that you don't try to push through it. In the last Q&A, I had mentioned that I was deadlifting, and at the top, I let all my air out, which just let all the tension out of my core. And I felt like my back just kind of shifted, like it just lost tension and it felt weird. Wasn't painful, but I was like, that's not good. Put the weight down. And my back was a little bit stiff for a few days. And then I didn't deadlift for 3 weeks just to make sure, just cause like, I was coming in the next week. It felt fine. I still felt it a little bit. And I was like, nah, I'm not going to push it. Then the next week, just gave it again another, just to make sure that everything is fine. And then now I'm back and my weight's back and everything's fine. So if you have any sort of pain, just, back off. Don't try to push through it. You're the barbell's still going to be there in a couple weeks, because it's not worth risking injury. We're trying to do this for a long term. We're not like, on the clock because we have this meet in X number of weeks and, we're trying to set a PR or something like that. We're trying to stay healthy. And we do not want joint injuries over anything else. We don't want to hurt our backs. We don't want to hurt our shoulders. We don't want to hurt our elbows. We don't want to hurt our knees. We want healthy joints that will allow us to, be active for the rest of our lives. So next question. How fast can you put on muscle while eating at maintenance? Good question. That really depends on how you're training and your genetics. What I was talking about just a little bit earlier is relevant. Over the last couple of years, I've spent a lot of this time more or less in maintenance. And I still gained a couple pounds of muscle in that period. So, if you're in maintenance, it's because you've been lifting weights for a long time. If you're not, the only reason to maintain for a long period of time is you either have the body you want and now it's time to just maintain it, or you have a reason to make, like you cut for summer and now you want to be lean for summer. Okay, fine. But, most people, if you're looking at maintaining for years, that's where I'm at now, it's because you kind of are done putting on size just overall. So it's really, you know, depends on your body. You could expect as a weightlifter with 5+ years under your belt, you really the most you can kind of hope for is a couple pounds of muscle a year, 2 or 3. And you probably would need to be in a surplus to really max that out. And to be fair, over the last couple of years, I did do a bit of bulking, but not having in the last year. I've really just been maintaining for a year. And I've noticed that in the last year, my weight's really just been fluctuating in the same range, which is good. So that means that if I did put on muscle in the last year, it's very little. It's maybe a half a pound, maybe a pound max. It's not definitely not 2 pounds or 3 pounds. So again, that's really what I'm shooting for, though, is I like to train hard. I want to have good workouts, but I don't want to be 4 years from now, like where I feel like I'm just too big, like my clothes don't fit me anymore. And I'm like now having to figure out how to lose muscle without, you know, wanting to just quit. All right. So next question, what would be qualifications for individuals who'd be interested in working for you? Interesting that. So it really kind of depends what we need. I get a lot of inquiries along these lines, which I'm flattered. I mean, I think it's great. You know, the only thing that I know that we're going to need in next year, probably first quarter, is going to be someone to manage social media. And by manage social media, I mean really get in there, dig in there, and let's build it. Like we kind of just we're in a holding pattern, if you probably noticed. On my social media, I'm not really a social media person, as I was talking about earlier. I'm not into showing off my shit. I'm not into showing off my lifestyle. I don't care to make people jealous or whatever. So I'm not great at social media inherently, to be fair. And like on YouTube, we joke in the office how pathetic our YouTube game is, yet somehow we have 30,000 subscribers, but all we do is post these. We're doing basically everything wrong. Like, you want to see how not to do YouTube? Just look at my YouTube channel and you're going to see, like, don't do your YouTube channel like this, because this is the shittiest way to do it. Long videos, don't care about production value, no cutting, just me sitting here babbling. The worst way to do YouTube. We definitely, though, next year are going to be focusing on the content creation side of things. Is going to go very heavily into YouTube because it's a big untapped resource for us. So that's really what we're going to be needing is going to be someone for social media. So in terms of like how I've hired people so far, or brought people on, has been very specific. In the beginning, it was just me and Jeremy, and we just did everything, the two of us. And then each time we've added somebody, it was for something specific. It was, we need somebody that for this, and that person either needs to have that skill set or somebody that we know can learn that and do a good job on that. So, you know, I don't care about college degrees. I don't care. I mean, I care about previous work experience, but I care about skill sets and hustle and being able to get shit done and figure shit out and not be stupid. As bad as that sounds, I mean, that's again been our biggest hurdle so far, has just been dealing with lazy people and stupid people, just people that just have no work ethic or just do things like really stupidly. Like, what were you actually thinking? Now, fortunately, that really hasn't been internally. Like, everyone that we've brought on internally has done very well and stuck with us, but more external people we've had to work with. So, next question. What is the max amount of fat that can be gained in one sitting? Yeah, good question. Jeremy always picks the best questions. I can eat mass amounts. Is it infinite? No, it's not infinite. This is actually, I've actually like reached out to people that are more educated than I am, that know more about this than I do, from a scientific perspective, and asked this question where like, I've not really been able to find a good answer on how much fat, like if you're eating pure dietary fat, like if I just drank olive oil, you know, straight, how much fat can the body synthesize in from one sitting, and when does it finally run out? Now, here's a like random little things. One, I know there's a point where like, if you've ever had your poop float, that's because there are undigested nutrients that have made it through. Like, you've eaten so much that your body can't process it all, or you have a health issue. Like, if it's just that, I believe that if somebody has that regularly, they're like supposed to go to the doctor. That means you're not absorbing nutrients, and you know, that can be a big problem. But I've had that like every year at Thanksgiving, I eat as much as I physically can, and I can eat a shitload of food. It's absurd how much food I can eat. So my dinner like last year was like 7 plates, legitimately 7 full plates of food. I ate until I was in pain. I had to lay down on the couch and just pass out, and I was breathing actually hurt. So I went full coma mode after all that food. The next day, my shit was just floating because there's only so much. There's just so much. It's like, I don't even know how many thousands. It's at least, I ate at least 6,000 calories, probably 7,000 to 8,000 calories, because there was some dessert in there as well in one sitting. And ironically, I swear to God, I didn't get fatter from that. Like, I was lean last year too. I was not, like at 15%, you don't really know what's going on anyway. I was sub 10%. I was probably 8, very similar to where I am now. And I noticed nothing. I myself was actually confused. Like, from an energy balance standpoint, how is that even possible? Now, of course, I probably did gain some fat, but I swear I did not see it. Like, I was expecting, all right, this is the test. Like, how much can I gain enough fat in one meal to like notice less ab definition, or like, you know, I have some ab vascularity, some veins, you know, you get to know yourself when you are in this world, you just stare at yourself. And I noticed nothing. So very surprised there. But you know, how much you can, I don't know. I really don't know. I think in just like, we've talked about this at the office, the stupid shit we talk about like at lunch, and it's probably, depending on your genetics and where your body's at and a bunch of factors, a pound of fat a day is probably possible if you really went at it, if you really ate, like if you ate 10,000 calories a day and drank a bunch of alcohol, which it makes sure that you store every possible gram of fat that you can, probably could gain a pound of fat a day. I probably could. I would be shocked if your body could send, because remember, your body has to make it. This isn't just like, oh, it magically appears. There's a process, and there's only so much that it can do before it finally just goes, I give up. Like, I'm getting as fat as I can. Settle down here. Just go shit this stuff out. We don't need it. Like, I don't know what to do with it. So, you know, try it out. We have holidays coming. Do what I do. Eat until you actually can't move. And then see what happens. But no, it's not infinite. It's definitely not infinite. Next question. Would you recommend incorporating Olympic lifts such as hang cleans into BLS? If so, what would be the best way? Thanks. No, unless you know what you're doing and you have a good reason to, and which would be that you want to. Some people really enjoy Olympic lifting, but it's inherently more dangerous. You're throwing around heavy weights. I don't do any Olympic lifting myself, not because I think it's so dangerous or whatever. It just doesn't really fit. I don't have a reason to do it. I personally don't find it particularly fun, but that's just me. So if you really wanted to, it really depends what you want to do. I have spoken with quite a few people that have done it, and what they do is they take a 3-day BLS type of approach, and then they do like 2 days of Olympic lifting, but they just have to work. And this is knowing your body and knowing what you can do. You have to work it around your deadlifting and squatting, as you know, because if your legs are blasted, you're not going to be doing anything great in terms of Olympic lifting. You need to have fresh legs. So sometimes they also do a bit less on their leg training days for BLS. So instead of 9 heavy sets, it's maybe 5 heavy sets or 6 heavy sets to, and this is trial and error. So, if you're doing 5-day BLS plus Olympic lifting is going to be rough. To be honest, the only way I would do that is I'd probably take legs day and reduce the amount of squatting and so forth that you're doing, and maybe add a little bit there, because that's giving it's giving your body a few days, your back, to recover from your deadlifting and so forth. But the people that I know that have incorporated it successfully and come to something that works well for them have taken a 3-day BLS type of approach. So it's basically like a 3-day strength type of approach with the Olympic lifting built around it. So, I don't have like a good pat answer for that, but next question. Hey, Mike, when you have no choice, like a work dinner or family dinner, and I need to eat something like a pancake or french fries or a sandwich, and I get home in the evening, is it important to eat extra protein before sleep, or not getting over my calories more important? Sorry for the bad English. Greetings from Belgium. Belgium. I want to go to Belgium one day. So a good question. I would say, no, it's totally fine if you don't have your protein before you go to bed one day. I mean, as a general thing, it is a good idea. That I've seen 2 studies now that show that it does improve muscle recovery, which of course makes sense because it just gives your body amino acids to work with all night. So your body can continue the repair process. It doesn't have to wait for the morning or until the next time you eat. But if it's one night, who cares? And if you're cutting, personally, I would just do what you're saying. I would just skip the protein. I would just keep my calories where they need to be and, you know, get back to normal the next day. No reason to overthink that, really. Yeah, I'll do a couple more. So next one. Will Mike have a training regimen for pre-competition bodybuilding? Yeah, good question for prep. You know, honestly, I've worked with quite a few people I've actually worked with more girls than guys in this for prep, but have worked with and heard from quite a few guys that have just kind of used my stuff to prep. And the bottom line is that when a lot of prep, like the technicalities of prep, comes into the drugging. And of course, there's a ton of drugs in bodybuilding. It's just is the way it is. I mean, that's the nature of the sport and how you build cycles and how you do that whole world. I don't know really anything about. I mean, I know superficially. I could talk. I've talked with a lot of people that have, you know, that are on steroids or have done them. So, and I know my way around to have an intelligent conversation about it, but I don't know anything about like how you do it. And that's where a lot of prep coaches, not to saying prep coaches are drug pushers, but in, you know, leagues where everyone's on drugs, that's a big part. You better know how to run your drugs right, or you're just going to be left behind. So when you're natural, prepping is actually a lot simpler. You, there's no real need to be manipulating your sodium and doing all that stuff. Lane Norton, speaking of Lane, has spoken about this, and he certainly knows what he's talking about, in terms of prep. And kind of just echo, I mean, I echo what he says, and that's been my experience is you want to prep well, get really fucking lean, make sure that you keep all your muscle, don't burn away your muscle, don't kill yourself with hours and hours of cardio, and don't starve yourself, give yourself enough time to preserve your muscle and preserve your sanity, and get really lean, don't worry about manipulating your sodium and potassium, keep those balanced, don't worry about manipulating your water, just keep it balanced. If you search for Norton on Muscle for Life, you can find a podcast where I interviewed him and he talked about this. So I'd recommend going and checking that out. So to answer your question, I don't know of anything. If I were to produce a product like that, I would have to feel that I really would have something to offer other than just this. Like, all right, you ready for the secret? Get really lean. Don't burn away your muscle. There you go. Thank you. Give me your money. Thank you. Yes. I mean, that's what actually would be kind of, yeah. Oh yeah. And don't mess with sodium, don't mess with potassium. Yeah. Maybe eat some carbs the day before. Yeah. Eat some carbs the day of. Give me your money. You owe me. Thank you. No. So if I were, I would have to dive into it more. And if I felt like there was really something I could offer, but, right now, I kind of, that's just like a, I don't think there's that much to really be said on it. So hopefully that helps you. How do we get Mike to yell, it's morphin' time, and do, I already did it, and do karate. What? This. And then flex. Oh, this is the tightest costume ever. All right, I did it. I yelled it. I did karate. So thank you for taking the time for the Halloween edition of our live Q&A. We will be back next month, about a month from now, and you know how we do it, last week of every month. And hope everybody has a great Halloween. Thanks for taking the time, and I will see you next time.